caused all kinds of havoc with the airplanes in that area. So hopefully this one stays together. And still, I don't think it's planned to go on into orbit. After 8 of these things, they still haven't made it to orbit. They got a lot of work behind them to do that. Any other comments before we close? I'm looking at the time. It's the witching hour. WS to us. As always, great to hear from you, and we'll catch you down the log. For now, we plan on being on the radio tomorrow night during the Club InfoNet, and that starts at 8:30 on these repeaters, and that's always followed by Swap and Chop with George, KD2FIU. And after Swap and Chop, the club always retransmits the amateur radio news line. Get to find out what's going on in the world in amateur radio. For now, we're going to turn back to Roy, ACCGS, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report. And thanks for putting that picture up. It's a great-looking picture, I thought. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report, all that you do for the technical net and all you do for the club. I appreciate it. Everyone appreciates it. So thanks. And I appreciate everyone's participation tonight. I hope you learned a few new things. I hope you were entertained. And I hope you'll join us next Sunday when we do it all over again. As always, a couple of people's quotes to leave you. Good old Dick K2RIW, who did this thing for more than 40 years, and I hope he's resting in peace. He would end these technical nets by advising everyone to be kind to each other, and that's always good advice. And good old Epictetus, his quote that I particularly like, maybe I'll pick a couple more. It is impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows, so try to keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brains might fall out. That would be unfortunate. Anyway, everyone, have a great week. Enjoy yourself. Stay warm. Stay dry. And please come back and join us next Sunday at 8 p.m. when we intend to do this all over again. So I will, this is AC2GS, and I will be clear as usual after I say, Slava Ukraini.
WH2ACM in South Florida. Thank you for a good statement. ACB2GS, WB2BXO, if you're sticking around for a minute.
Sure, Frank. What can I do you for?
Since you were on here, you probably didn't see that a movie filmed in Brighton Beach won Best Picture and a whole lot of other awards. $6 million indie film. Go ahead.
Yeah. I try not to do too many things at once. If you've ever seen my QRZ page, you have an idea of what my computer screens look like during the technical net. So I wouldn't put up another window to see what was going on with the Oscars.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I hadn't even heard of the movie until this week. I heard talking about that it was filmed in Brighton Beach for what is considered very little money these days. I was like, huh? Anyway, I'll have to see it at some point since I still own an apartment in the neighborhood. Trying to sell it, but for the time being, I still own it. And I lived there for about 30 years. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's not unusual. There was a television show, I forget exactly what it was. It was about a hacker that did a lot of filming in Coney Island. There was a travesty back in the 90s. I'm sure you remember the X-Files. And they actually did an X-File that they said was taking place on Brighton, and it wasn't. Obviously, they were in Vancouver, and they didn't even know about what it looked like. There were no elevated trains. It looked like a regular street in Vancouver.
I think I remember. I remember seeing some Brighton Beach TV show or movie that I looked at it and I said, "Huh, that doesn't look like the neighborhood." So there's a lot of that, but this one, I'll have to see it, but it presumably really was, and I guess if I'd still lived there full time, I probably would have known about it, but that's interesting. Yeah, kind of wish at this point that they'd, Elon Musk would go up in his Starship and stay there, but, that's a whole other conversation. Still interested in seeing how that goes because I think that's probably one of the few one of the programs of his that is worthwhile, I guess.
Yeah, but I tend to think he's going to screw it up. He's been screwing it up all along, so there's no real reason he's going to stop screwing it up. He's going to try and basically defund the moon missions and all other NASA missions in favor of Mars, which will sign a contract with SpaceX. Keep it in the family type of nonsense. So, unless eventually someone calls the cops and they all end up in jail.
Well, down the road, the clown show will be run off the road, but it's going to take some time, I think. More time than I think many of us want it to take. But again, like I said, that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, the Blue Ghost thing, that's absolutely amazing that they pulled that off. Now, what's even more amazing is apparently GPS works up there. I mean, I remember vaguely learning the path loss equations for EME communications when I studied for my extra, I guess 30 years ago now. And, the path loss isn't incredible, so it's kind of amazing that with small receivers and antennas that actually works, I guess.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'd love to see some of the math involved in doing the calculations.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, but they did some experimentation. It seems to work. Obviously, they'll need some more satellites to make it work on the backside of the moon, but it's impressive and interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think people have their hopes a little too high, that it's going to be a gas station. You'd be lucky if you get some drinkable water or some electrolyzable oxygen.
Well, I think that's one of the things the Blue Ghost is going to try to determine is how much water is actually there and how easy it is to get at. And, it may turn out that there's, that there's not very much or that it's chemically bound in a way that's very very difficult to get, and I know that's kind of more in your wheelhouse. I get the impression you think it probably is very nearly to very difficult to actually get water out of there.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe I'm just being a pessimist. I try not to be, but it's just kind of, it kind of, you know, someone says that they discovered some ice, and immediately other people say, fine, we'll just somehow find energy to break the molecular bonds, and we'll build enough rocket fuel to take off all over the place. You know, going from A to Z, you know, there's a lot of other steps in the middle, but, you know, we'll see what the future brings. I tend to think we're going to have to bring our own supplies. I think it was Robert Heinlein, the moon is a harsh mistress, who had this idea that it was going to be difficult to get stuff to the moon, but once you got to the moon, because of the low gravity, you could have a slingshot type of thing that just kind of put it at escape velocity, and you could aim it back at the Earth.
Yeah, he used, I guess, you know, what's called a mass driver today. You know, the big gun concept to shoot things back at the Earth. I enjoyed that story. I haven't read all that much science fiction, but that's one of the few science fiction books I did read when I was a kid, and enjoyed it immensely. I thought it was really a really fun story.
Yeah, that was during the tail end of his children's writing, which was very nice. I mean, he used to write loads of child science fiction in the 50s, and more than a few times he had a character who was a young amateur radio operator, which I found particularly interesting. You know, then he got into the adult science fiction, and he was a kinky guy. So, you know, that got stranger and stranger. I mean, he was writing about all kinds of time travel incest. I think he was his own father, or the character that was the main character in one of his novels was his own father in the book. He had gone back in time and had sex with his mother, and she gave birth to him. So he was a very strange guy.
I do get a kick out of it. I've heard some analyses that says, yeah, time travel is possible, but it would require more energy than exists in the universe.
Well, it kind of breaks the laws of causality, so that's kind of like you can have some mass object, an object with rest mass, accelerated to the speed of light, but you would require an infinite amount of energy to do that. Whereas time travel kind of violates the laws of causality, cause and effect. Because with time travel, you can have cause, you can have effect before you have cause.
Yeah, but, you know, I people say that something is impossible. I remember when I was in, I forget what it was, college, and I said, well, what about writing to DVDs, you know, CD, read, write, etc., and a professor saying, oh, well, that's impossible. You're reading too much science fiction, Mr. Grossman. Go ahead.
That's just being an old curmudgeon. I mean, there are a lot of guys that just doubt everything. But, you know, the laws of conservation of energy, I think, are pretty good. I don't think anyone's going to be violating them. So, I mean, there are fundamental laws of symmetry and such that you got to kind of rewrite the whole damn book in order to allow it. And there's a lot of things that just are not technologically we're capable of this at this time. And that could be subject to change if it doesn't violate any fundamental law of physics. So, I mean, building a DVD obviously does not violate any fundamental laws. It's just an engineering problem that up until the time it came into existence, the solution wasn't available. That's all. So that's just a cranky old guy. You know, we've all been that some days.
Yeah, that's interesting, though. But, I realize that if something isn't physically impossible, something doesn't violate the laws of physics, then somebody will eventually figure out the engineering. And, but the speed of light thing is interesting. You can't exceed the speed of light in part because, as I understand it, when something reaches the speed of light, it would get infinite mass, which, of course, is impossible. As you approach the speed of light, if I remember correctly, your energy starts getting converted to mass rather than increased velocity, so you can't do it.
Yeah, the effect of mass is the energy of your kinetic energy. So the mass and energy are basically interchangeable. Mass is concentrated energy, really. So if you increase the kinetic energy of an object, you're effectively increasing the amount of mass it has, or energy it has. Same difference. But it goes back to causality again, actually, because it's not actually light doing this absurd thing. It's the very fabric of space-time. Anything that travels through the substance of space-time has that speed limit because that's the inherent speed limit of causality. Cause and effect can only occur up until a certain speed. It can't be instantaneous. You can't do something at point A and then have the effect, a billion miles away at point B without some kind of interaction between the two. And the rate of the interaction is the speed of light at a vacuum. There are other particles that travel at the speed of light in a vacuum, graviton, supposedly, gravity waves.
Yeah, but particles that travel at the speed of light have no mass. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, they have no rest mass. So they're, again, gravitons, although they are theorized as being the energy carriers for gravity, don't have any mass themselves, the same way that electromagnetic waves don't carry any charge. So they don't have any rest mass. So if you stop something like a photon, it immediately goes out of existence because it can't exist at anything but the speed of light.
Yeah, I know some of these concepts kind of get out of the range where mere mortals can understand them. I'm reading the biography of Oppenheimer, which of course is a lot more detailed and interesting than the movie. Really interesting story about how he grew up, and the influences on him, etc. How he discovered the Los Alamos area. An interesting book.
Yeah, I have it somewhere. It's on a stack of things I have to read. I think I read the first couple of pages and it didn't catch me, so I put it aside for a while. But I'll get back to it eventually.
Yeah, I kind of get that, but it's fun. I mean, listening to it on Audible, you know, good listening for the gym and on the throne. Kind of fun.
Yeah, I have an Audible account. I get audio books. I have a weird system I set up. It's a terrible term for it, but I have a dead man switch. So basically, I could turn an audio book on before I go to sleep, and every 10, 15 minutes, it beeps me to hit the button to reset it to another 10, 15 minutes. And if I fall asleep or I don't hit the button, then it just kind of goes on pause.
I think the Audible app itself can do that, right?
I think you could just set it for a timer. Then you'd have to pick it up and change it repeatedly. So you can set it to play a book for an hour or half hour or whatever. But this way, you know, it's kind of open-ended. As long as I hit the button, and it's a lot easier to just hit a button than it is to pull your cell phone out of the charger and to get to the right page and get to the time thing, change the time, put it back. Most likely, if I tried that, I would just start over and go to sleep.
Yeah, right. And if you fall asleep, and it runs so much longer, you miss a bunch of it. You've got to rewind through the book to find out where you last heard it. I'll occasionally do that most of the time. Most of the time I listen in the gym or, rather than at night. In the morning when my alarm goes off, I usually put a podcast on. You know, something that if I doze for a while and miss some of it, I'm not going to be heartbroken.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only problem. If you fall asleep, you might miss something. I tend not to do it with reference stuff. I tend to do it with fiction. So usually fiction is kind of written for short attention span Americans, you know, where, you know, you could walk out of you could watch a movie on TV and you could walk out for 15 minutes and come back and just sit down and know exactly what's going on. Whereas if you ever watch a British drama, if you leave the room for more than about 1 minute, you have no clue what the heck's going on anymore. Because I think they assume that you actually pay attention.
That's interesting. British have more attention span than we do. But I think people don't realize how much of this is cultural. Anyway, I think it's getting a little late here. I'm gonna check the handbands for a few minutes and then call it a night. You know, there was a big were you on 10 meters this afternoon? It's how chaotic did it sound to you with the VX contest on?
Very chaotic. I came and I went. You know, I sat there and I looked at spaces and I said, oh, that's gone. Okay, that might be about two. Well, it's gone. And so I just gave up because there were gaps, but they were very temporary. You know, they were one-sided gaps where I wasn't hearing the other guy and it seemed like an open space, but inevitably the guy he was talking to would transmit and you know, he would QRM any kind of a net. So I just said to myself, you know, why bother? And I just put up my little sign on the website that we canceled today because of the VX contest. And, you know, it happens a couple of times a year, and, you know, it's better not to fight it. You know, there are some obstinate people out there. They would get on the frequency, and they would demand their rights and all kinds of nonsense. But, you know, let them have their day. I hope they enjoyed the contest.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years ago, 40 meters China, from one of the African Bee expeditions on 40 meters, and they were on a frequency that was being used by some religious net in Mississippi, and the guys in Mississippi insisted on their unalienable rights to the frequency, and they didn't care that there was a Bee expedition using the frequency that either they weren't hearing or didn't care about. Made things very difficult for those of us that wanted to work the Bee expedition.
Yeah, what can you do? Either way, AC2GS. There's always jerks out there. If you wait long enough, you'll hear a jerk.
Well, there are, you know, happens in all businesses, all hobbies, you know, whatever. Look what goes on with your own hobbyist doing, you know, doing things there. You know, they're not supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I just take care of myself. I leave, you know, what other people think is appropriate to their own moral guidelines.
Yeah, anyway, that's, yeah, like I said, it's a problem with a lot of things. Anyway, I'm pooping out here. 7-3, good to talk to you. I've sort of gotten involved in watching a little of the Oscars, trying to do some stuff on my website, and, some other stuff, and suddenly realized, oh, TechNet is on. Let me get on. Anyway, the Starship thing, we'll see what I see, what happens with that. That should be interesting. WB2BX show. Have a good...
You too, Frank. Be well. 73, and we'll talk to you down the line. Yep.
Enjoying hearing your net tonight down here in South Florida.
Sounds like Roy may have shut down because there was a long gap there, which in South Florida, you know, it's understandable since you're coming probably through EchoLink. WB2BX in Northeast Philadelphia.
Well, hopefully I can be heard.
Oh, yeah, now you're being heard, Roy. Go ahead. I'm going to be listening here. WB2BX.
Okay, WA2HEM, I hope you enjoyed tonight's net.
Yes, indeed, you sure do. But I have a question, if somebody's on there, a technical question.
Well, the TechNet is over and done, but I'm the guy who runs it, so if you want to, you can ask me.
Given this site by a fellow who lives up in in Long Island, named Howard. Don't know if you know him or not. But my question is, I have an ICOM 2730A, and I have a 2-meter antenna about 50 feet up, and it's a width. And can I use the dual side with that same antenna because I have that long cable?
I'm not quite sure what the question is. You have a 2-meter antenna, you have a transceiver. How are you planning to change the configuration of your antenna that you're asking, well, you know, if you could do something? I didn't quite get that.
My question is, do I have to have another antenna, which is it's a dual band radio, and can I run them both out of the whip antenna on the 50 feet up because I have the long cable?
Well, you know, I mean, there are some verticals that are designed to be dual band, you know, 2 meter, 70 centimeter. But if that antenna is cut to be 2 meters, it's not going to give you a great 70 centimeter capability. You know, you'll have a high SWR, you'll have reflections, you'll have problems. So, you know, it would be best theoretically to have an antenna that's designed to be dual band. If you just have one wire, you could use one coax cable if it's really important to you to feed two different antennas by just having a frequency splitting a duplexer. So that's possible. It entails a cost in itself because you know that's an extra piece of equipment, and you'd have to kind of split the coax signal at the antenna site, feed the 2 meter to the present whip, and feed a 70 centimeter resonant antenna to the other input of the duplexer.
Thank you. I think you solved my problem. Appreciate that. And I did live in Northeast Philadelphia some years ago.
Ah, very good. Well, I mean, that's very common. I talk to a lot of people in Florida on my 10-meter net on Sunday mornings, and pretty much all of them either lived in New York or stayed a while in New York. So it's very, very common. I get the idea that it's very easy to find people from Philadelphia and New York down in Florida.
I was stationed in New York and stayed there for 20 years until I migrated to South Florida.
Oh, very good. We have a gentleman who now lives in Nebraska. You I don't know if you've really listened much before to the TechNet and such. He was stationed here, I think. He was in the Army or something, and he spent a couple of years and got used to Limewark and such, and then he went to Germany, and then he left the Army and got some jobs in Nebraska, but he had an Echolink, and he remembered the Limewark had an Echolink, and he connected to Limewark, and he's been chatting away for a couple of years now. There's another guy who, he was born someplace else, but he just spent enough time in New York City area, the metro area, to pick up a couple of interests and repeaters here.
New York, lower New York State, is interesting into itself. And I was in the military there for many years and then transferred to another government agency. And then travel to Florida.
Yeah. Like I said, we have a gentleman who is. I feel kind of bad for him. Apparently, Nebraska is not that. It's not very populated, and the percentage of people who are hams is very low. And he has a significant problem, you know, finding people to talk on the radio in his own state, so that's why he kind of sought out New York.
Years ago, I belonged to the RCA Repeater Club. It was in the NBC building.
Yeah, I think it still exists. It's a little bit strange. it's a kind of pseudo club. They have a repeater, W2ABC, obviously, and it's a good repeater. When we had the Hurricane Sandy, it was one of the few repeaters that was available because it had real emergency power, not a battery that fell apart after a couple of hours. But it's a strange kind of a club. If you're not actually an employee who retired from RCA or NBC, you can't vote. So you can join the club, but you can't have any say in how the club works. So it's kind of weird.
So true. And that's one of the reasons I left before I got answered. I was like a stepchild.
Yeah, and the guy running the repeater was a little strange back about 10 years ago. I haven't listened to that repeater in a long time. Every so often, people would just kind of find it, and they didn't look it up. They didn't realize it was a closed repeater for the most part, and so they would just do what they usually do on repeaters. They would chat with each other, and this guy was really self-important. You know, he would come on to these people and shoo them away. He said, "You have no idea. This is an international repeater. This is Disney's own repeater." And that was what he was saying. What did ABC? Maybe I got it wrong. But nevertheless, I mean, that's what these broadcaster-owned and operated clubs tend to be, very, very inside-ish. You know, they don't really look for outsiders anywhere.
Talking about the 1980s while I lived there. I was transferred out of New York City in 98 to Florida. So glad I was, and I found a home down here, and I love living down here. I appreciate you picking me up and your advice. Thank you, sir. W82HM will be clear through W2VL.
Okie doke. Have a great week, 73, and you know where to find us if you need us.
By the way, my name is Mike Ontario. Roberto Tango.
Can you say that again? It got broken up.
Mike Ontario Romeo Tango.
Nice to meet you, Mort. I'm Roy. Okie doke, once again, this is AC2GS, and I will be clear.
That's right, bro. Fuck it. Yeah, keep the wall. Fuck.